Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I will talk about a variety of subjects. I will talk about the populist movement going on in Europe. I will talk about consciousness. There were some key issues raised by Eve Lorgan in a recent interview I had with her, or she had with me, rather. I will talk about AI and killer robots. And I will also talk about a recent appointment by Donald Trump, which should raise the eyebrows of even the most warm and fuzzy Trump lover. We're reaching the end of the year 2018. I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, all of that. I know some people are out there, bah humbug. These are all pagan things. Bah humbug. I like the fact that people can get together, hoist up a few bevies, be happy, be joyful, full of merriment, wishing each other well, wishing each other a new year. There's nothing wrong with that. Some people, they can't see the forest for the trees. They know a little bit, and then they want to be, you know, different, and so they just want to be a Grinch and bah humbug type and push their intellectual snobbery, so they think, onto others by trying to marginalize and be dismissive about other people having joy during the Christmas season. I'm not buying that, right? They need to get over themselves. If someone's going to put up a Christmas tree, let them put up a Christmas tree. They want to put up decorations and Christmas lights, let them. And stop being so judgmental, like you know everything. I'm tired of these people. And really, what have they accomplished? What have they done? Some of these bah humbug types, right? All they're really into is dashing everyone's hopes, pacifying them. Just pay attention to their deeds and their words also. But what are they really accomplishing, a lot of these people in the field that I'm in? My Christmas wish for a lot of people is just more discernment. And to stop looking at these big talkers, people who constantly big note themselves, as being some kind of special fount of wisdom. Because they speak out about this, that, or the other. I'm going to be having Randy Moggins back on the show at some point, and we already agreed on it, to talk about the Space Cowboys, the Space Cowboys, right? The how the disclosure movement in regards to secret space operations has been hijacked by a bunch of space cowboys, the Yellow Lantern, Hexagonal Alliance, etc., etc. There's just no discernment out there, right? And there's all this, also these other people who just bounce from one guru or self-help person to another. It's just, you know, they're just endlessly checking out this person's video, that person's podcast, getting a consult from this person, that person, the other person. And the answers are within. Why do some people keep projecting outward to find their answers when they should be looking within, finding out why they feel they're this certain way about certain things? Recognize the shame-based parts of us, which we all have within us. Work through them. Make the shadow your ally instead of your adversary. So I give short shrift to all these, oh, bah humbug, the pagan origins of Christmas, God, the Catholic God, as you know it, doesn't exist. Yeah, I know all that, right? But I'm still going to have merriment. I'm still going to have joy. I'm still going to hang around people that I know and I love in the holiday season. And it's an important point to make, because there's all these people out there that are just real downers, real negative people. Always got to find something negative to talk about, the negative Nellies. And these are the last people I want to be around in the holiday season. Same thing with Thanksgiving. Oh, Thanksgiving is just the genocide of Native Americans, yada, 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 right? So on that basis, let's stop drinking wine in Europe because the Romans brought wine to Gaul and wiped out and enslaved a lot of the Gallic peoples. So wine is a symbol of oppression, and I mean, where does it end? Someone's always got something to nitpick and complain about something. So just keep an eye out for these negative Nellies and don't let them bring your vibe down. These people are just a waste of time anyway, but I thought I'd throw it out there because, after all, it is the holiday season and we really do need to be thankful for what we have and looking forward to the new year. A lot of good things are on the horizon, I feel. And it's a good time to do a little review of the past season before we really get started here. I think 2019 will be the litmus test for good old Vladimir Putin. If Putin allows and his party to Syria going under, and it turns out just to be a ruse to suck Iran into a larger war, and it'll just mean that Putin doesn't care about his soldiers any more than FDR cared about the sailors, soldiers, and Marines getting hammered at Pearl Harbor, or the thousands and thousands of soldiers being slaughtered in Europe and the Pacific during World War II. Same thing with Woodrow Wilson. He made a campaign promise not to get America involved in Europe's wars, but of course he backtracked. The war was, you have to read up on the history of how World War I came into being. Basically, it was an attempt on the part of the elite to isolate Germany, make them out to be the bad guys, and then destroy them. And their destruction process wasn't complete until the Americans got involved, when they didn't need to be involved in World War I. So if Putin allows Syria to go by the wayside and Syria turns into another Libya, an open air vast slave market, oh, where's all the people screaming about racism there? So many of the enslaved people in Libya are black, right? So, you know, where's Christine Waters when you need her? Cynthia Waters, whatever the hell her name is. In for a penny, in for a pound. If Vlad is going to be in there and he's going to provide air defenses to the Syrians, and he's going to send in, although he denies this, send in mercenaries to do black ops work and do his level best to keep ISIS out and use his air force to attack ISIS convoys, making off with all this stolen oil. Well, you might as well keep doing that and keep the place from going under. Iran has a vested interest in not letting Syria go the way of Libya, but if Iran gets sucked in and Syria goes down, and it'll just mean that Putin doesn't care about the number of soldiers and airmen he's already lost, right? Those were just pawns on a chessboard. So I really feel 2019, going into 2020, we'll learn a lot more about good old Vlad. And hopefully, you know, there's nothing wrong with hope either. I mean, this is the holiday season. Nothing wrong with hope and hopefulness and hope for a new year, a happy new year. And, you know, I'm not whistling past the graveyard either. I'm not dangerously naive. I know how these things work. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that Putin is playing this game. It doesn't mean that the ultimate string pullers, who are non-human, by the way, and many of you already know that they are not above creating the conditions for a vast conflict, a vast war on the surface to further cull the population. I mean, they're already unleashing all these bioweapons and, you know, chems and everything else. So that's warfare in itself, meted out to an unsuspecting, largely cud-chewing surface population. Why would it be any different if they expanded these bogus, not bogus wars, to the inhabitants of those countries and the people on the front line shooting? But the pretext for this global war on terror is bogus. What's to stop the powers that be from creating the conditions to bring into the conflict openly China, Russia, etc.? Because the string pullers are not humans. They don't give a rat's ass, pardon my Anunnaki, about how many people get killed on the surface. That's part of the agenda to cull the surface population. And 2019 is going to be a big year. We'll find out more. We'll find out where exactly Putin stands. Nothing wrong with hope. There's nothing wrong with hoping that Putin is somehow different from all the rest. And I've given him the benefit of the doubt in the past. But I've also been reading about him and his activities all across the board, because I don't look at this as just a one-sided thing. I look at this from the standpoint of an intelligence analyst, looking at all strands of information, tying them in, looking for pattern data correlations, seeing how all these pieces of the puzzle fit into a mosaic. Also, here we are, 2018. What happens in Australia? Well, once again, Australia, the east coast of Australia, this time the central coast in particular. That central coast is between Sydney in the south and Newcastle in the north. Well, what happens? Central coast gets hammered, and I will provide a link. You have to see this artificially generated cloud. It was actually spinning. At times, it looked like a bloody cube, and people on the ground said the way it was spinning, they thought it would turn into a tornado. Now, what's interesting is, and I didn't know this, and I have to look into the science behind it, but when I experience hailstorms in North America, in California, or in Arizona, they were usually of brief duration, and it suddenly got really cold, and suddenly, I guess the atmospheric conditions were right, and suddenly hail comes down. When I've experienced hailstorms in Australia, usually the weather was kind of warm and muggy. Oh, there would be some wind. There would be a lot of dark, foreboding clouds. I'm talking about the naturally occurring ones, and it's open to question just how natural anything is nowadays. With not only the weather manipulation, but this what I feel is a large second solar system coming back into the solar system, causing all these issues. In the southern hemisphere, or at any rate in Australia, what I've experienced thus far is, it could be warm and muggy, and suddenly, all these hailstones come out of the sky, which to me was a source of wonderment and bafflement when the first time I experienced it. But the other day, this hailstorm, and now that they're coming up with cutesy names to describe what these hailstones look like. I mean, just think of the names they made up in North America. Oh, a polar vortex, a polar vortex. And then you see the people on YouTube with a chunk of this fake ice, and they've applying flame to it, and it's emitting this weird chemical smell, and it doesn't melt. And then the skeptics and the trolls come along. Oh, that's a fake video, yada yada yada. Just like the skeptics and the trolls pop up. Oh, the yellow vest movement, it's all a distraction, it's a psyop. Yeah, right, I'll get more into that. How millions of people all over Europe, and it's not just France, are rising up, and they're openly talking about all these globalist agendas they're sick and tired of and want to see gotten rid of, including mass immigration, mind you, right? Yeah, no self-respecting, controlled opposition would even think of uttering these things. Again, it's a case of when people fall for that, it's a distraction, it's a psyop. Pizzagate is a distraction, it's a psyop. Never mind, it leads right up to Hillary Clinton and Podesta. Oh, it's a psyop. It's like when people throw words like psyop and distraction out, it just causes the minds of a lot of people who consider themselves to be truthers to be suddenly stuck in neutral, grinding out the gears, right? That's all it takes to make them question themselves. Instead of having the self-worth and integrity to say, no, that's nonsense. I'll believe what I want about the yellow vest movement, so-called. I'll believe what I want about the polar vortex, right? Because when you're looking at a video and someone's applying flame to a big chunk of ice, or what seems like ice, and it doesn't melt, and they and many others are reporting a weird chemical smell that comes out of it, and abnormally high temperatures, and then you see the radar pictures and all kinds of weird electromagnetics effects going on, something's going on, right? And that seemed to be the case with this hailstorm, the super hailstorm that struck between Sydney and Newcastle, and mostly along the central coast. I mean, if you look at the video and the pictures of some of these hailstones, you can see why they call it cauliflower stones, the cauliflower hailstones, because they're kind of shaped like it, right? Completely unnatural, if you ask me. And some of these things were as big as a cricket ball, as big as a baseball in North American terms. And many people had their windshields of their cars taken out, suffered damage in their homes. Someone out there must have been conked in the head by one of these things, right? They came out of the sky. It was like an airstrike of like these cauliflower stones. Point of relevance is not only did it happen to Australia again, and I remember back in 2009, September 2009, was it? They call it the Red Dawn. And look this up, Sydney's Red Dawn, I think it was 2009, where people woke up, including yours truly, and I thought it was like morning already. It was bright, bright, bright outside, like daylight. The only difference was, I mean, you could see every detail in the street. It was like high noon, except it was an eerie incandescent white. And this red dust was just coming down and landing. It was all over the place. And this red dust storm was something like a 1,000-kilometer front moving in from the inland, the desert. And they can blow, pardon the pun, they can blow as much smoke as they want about the red dust, saying it was, you know, air currents or whatever that drudged all the red dust in from the interior of Australia from the desert, right? But they blithely overlook and cannot explain away why it was so bright. And I spoke to people. They said that, yeah, I woke up at, you know, 2:15 a.m., 3 a.m., and I thought it was like the morning already because it was so bright outside. They don't have a rational explanation for that. And then Nikki Colombo and I got into a discussion. I can't remember if it was on her show or it was on the Switch, the Cosmic Switchboard. But she got to talking about how when she was in Fiji, she felt that this artificial storm was generated just to muck with her and screw up her holiday. And I talked about how when Kali and I were driving up from Melbourne up to New South Wales, there was this large superstorm. We call it the storm of the century. And it happened to be epicentered exactly where we wanted to go. But it affected two states, Victoria and New South Wales. And the place we were headed to was where it was centered. And it may sound arrogant in the extreme, but I couldn't help feel, and I still absolutely am convinced, that at some level, that storm was generated at Kylie and I. Oh, of course they're going to go after and, you know, turn the storm loose on others and everyone else that happens to be around. And we were probably not the sole reason they were going to do that. But at some level, I feel that it was directed at us. Now, this whole hailstorm thing the other day, no, that wasn't directed at yours truly. It was just directed at the people in the region, right? But it was weather weaponry. All you have to do is go onto the U.S. Air Force official website, and there is a PDF there. A white paper talking about utilizing the weather as a weapon, weather modification, weather warfare. It's right there on the website. And then I think, when was it? Oh, several years back, there was another artificial storm generated. Extremely high winds. You see some of the video from Florida recently, where if you look at the trees and how they're being whipped around, it shows that the currents are coming from different directions, right? It's not just simply, you know, a case of vegetation, plants, trees swaying, you know, left and right or right and left. It's like they're being whipped around in every direction, which is a hallmark of these electromagnetically generated artificial storms and wind currents. And in some of those videos, you can see, if you slow the video down, momentarily bright flashes in the sky. That's another hallmark, that somebody is tweaking with knobs, somebody's pressing buttons somewhere and creating the you know, these electromagnetic effects that are causing the high winds. And I experienced that, and many people experienced that several years back, where We were out of power for like 5 days. And the winds were just being, I mean, the winds were so terrific. The trees were just being whipped in every direction. Power lines went down, huge branches came down. Effectively isolated certain beach communities that only had one or two roads leading in and out. There were city buses that were trapped in these coastal towns because they couldn't get out, and no other motorists could get out for that matter, because there was large branches in the roads. There were down power lines that made it impossible for vehicles to go in and out of those coastal communities. Again, it was another example of weather weaponry, I'm absolutely convinced. So for whatever reason, the powers that be, it's like Australia, especially the east coast of Australia, it seems to be the happy hunting ground to utilize these. And they're way past the experimental stage at this point. And now they're operational. They have been for some time. They keep using this stuff in Australia on Australians. And by Australians, I mean the flora and fauna too, the plants, the animals, the wildlife, teeming with wildlife, the eastern coast of Australia, and it just being hammered, poor animals. And I don't know why. I'm sure they have a reason. There's a demented logic behind it. So that's what they do. A lot of the damage occurred near a very large mall. And imagine all the Christmas shoppers, all the motorists heading towards this mall or driving nearby, and suddenly they're just hammered by this hailstorm, this artificially generated hailstorm. And you really got to see the dark cloud. I mean, if you look at it, some of the outline, especially in the left side of this dark cloud, is too straight. There are no straight lines in nature, as far as I know, right? So when someone tries to explain away a structure on Mars and saying, "Oh, well, that's just natural erosion," or "That's just a trick of the light," yada 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 yada, no, nonsense. You're not going to have a straight line, and that was the case with this cloud formation, a very dark cloud. See, we become conditioned to seeing very dark clouds that don't emit rain. In the old days, a dark cloud meant it was saturated with rain, and shortly there with water, and shortly you would have a downpour, right? Nowadays, because I don't know what oxides or whatever they put in the chems when they want to obscure the second sun, not the only reason why they spray everyone, but it is one of the reasons. Then you have all these low hanging dark clouds. Sometimes the bottom of these dark clouds stretches from horizon to horizon, one end of the horizon to the other, and the bottom edge is as straight and as straight as a ruler's edge, completely unnatural, right? And but no rain comes out. But in this case, it was a very dark cloud. It was spinning. People on the ground said they thought it would turn into a tornado. And from the perspective of the viewer, perspective of the camera, the left side of this large cloud, this dark cloud, was very straight. Again, completely unnatural. Something is keeping that shape the way it is. Because normal air currents, you would expect to see, it would be more amorphous, I would think, as far as a shape goes. You wouldn't have any straight lines on it. And suddenly all these cauliflower-shaped hailstones come out of the sky, wiping out people's windscreens. Let's see what the insurance companies do. Like in the East Coast of America, unfortunately, especially now that they're generating so many of these artificial storms, hurricanes, and then people's property gets thrashed and their homes get flooded, and the insurance companies find some excuse not to honor the claims that all come flooding in. Bad pun, no pun intended. Let's see if the insurance companies will honor all these claims when all these artificially generated cauliflower friggin' hailstones, some as big as cricket balls or baseballs, come out of the sky, destroy property and homes and cars and whatnot. Let's see how that goes. So anyway, that's the elite, so-called. That was a Christmas present, I guess, to the people on the Central Coast, and also people in Australia, in Sydney, rather, reported problems with hailstones coming out of the sky as well. So I thought I'd mention that, and I'd like to hear the thoughts of people out there that experienced it on the Central Coast of Australia, between Sydney in the south and Newcastle in the north. Well, here's an article that showed up on Global Research, Dateline December 12, 2018, written by Larry Chin, who I feel is an outstanding investigative reporter, certainly for surface-level corruption, geopolitics, etc., etc. Larry Chin is in a class by himself. And here's the headline: CIA covert operative William Barr, nominated by Trump for Attorney General, his role in the Iran-Contra affair. Now, when I saw that headline, my eyes bulged out of, figuratively bulged out of, my eye sockets. William Barr, because he's been named, along with his pseudonym Robert Johnson, as a key player in. See, the term Iran-Contra is kind of a catch-all phrase that describes securities fraud, financial fraud of all different types, assassinations, murders, drug trafficking. Terry Reid talks about how they made a industry out of stealing light planes, single-engine Cessnas and whatnot, changing the serial numbers, and then using those planes for drug smuggling and all manner of illegal activities, especially as it relates to the CIA Contra drug war in Nicaragua and in the greater Central America area, Honduras. Honduras was a staging ground for the war against the Sandinista regime, just as Costa Rica was also a staging ground for the illegal war against the Sandinista regime in Nicaragua. And William Barr was a key player in that. He was mentioned prominently in Terry Reid's book, Compromised, where he talks about Bush and Clinton and their role in Iran-Contra and all the drug trafficking. And other insiders, Al Martin, who wrote a classic book about the Iran-Contra affair. So when I saw the name William Barr, I mean, my eyes just bulged out. I go, what the hell is he? Is Trump nominating this guy to be Attorney General? I mean, that's the highest ranking law enforcement officer in the US. And you're gonna put, like, and it wouldn't be the first time, but I mean, William Barr is just so corrupt. Okay, let me read parts of the article and you'll get a drift of what I'm saying. And again, this is an example. Name dropping alert. Freeman Fly talked about this on my show, and I think we discussed it on his show maybe, where people just aren't, in general, people in our field, they're not archivists anymore. They're not historians anymore. They're not researchers anymore. They don't read books anymore. The name William Barr should be a household name, common knowledge amongst anyone who considers themselves to be a quote-unquote truther, right? I haven't even been on InfoWars lately to see what their spin on William Barr is, if they even mention him at all, okay? But on Global Research, you have writers like Larry Chin who know the background. And again, it's an example where if people are just keyboard warriors and they go from website to website, they don't even go really to the right websites to get the hardcore bottom line information, even if it's just surface level stuff. Okay? Some people are strictly surface level, and there's nothing wrong with that. As long as they make an effort to source their information, and when they're presented with information that runs contrary to their beliefs and biases, instead of just dismissing it out of hand, like a corporate media news personality, delve into it. Find out if there's something to it or not, right? Because you have so many of these people who are Trump supporters, they're always blowing smoke about, oh, Trump is playing 4D chess, and some Talmudic type must have come up with that term, 4D chess, and they're probably laughing every time they hear it invoked. Oh, Trump is playing 4D chess, and now he's brought in William Barr, and he just shows that he's bringing his enemies in closer. And anyway, here's some interesting excerpts from this article, which I highly recommend. Okay, Dateline Global Research, December 12, 2018, by Larry Chin. Should William Barr serve as the highest law enforcement official of the country? For a presidential administration whose mandate was the eradication of corruption, the quote, draining of the swamp, unquote, and the restoration of law? With a nomination of William Barr for Attorney General, that is what President Donald Trump wants American citizens and the world to accept. Fawning mainstream media coverage and streams of puff pieces laud Barr as a, quote, respected establishment legal scholar, as do Donald Trump's Twitter post about Barr. The fact is, there is nothing to respect and everything to condemn about Barr's work as a key inner circle operative throughout George Herbert Walker Bush's rise to power, from CIA director to vice president to president. These aspects of Barr's resume remain whitewashed by mainstream coverage. They have been amply documented by whistleblowers and those who work directly with Barr. The issue at hand is not Barr's, quote, legal mind, unquote, but the ruthless mind that he wielded with frightening authority and expertise as George H.W. Bush's treasonous hatchet man in the Justice Department. William Barr distorted and corrupted the law as grossly as anyone in modern history. Barr, CIA operative. It is a sobering fact that American presidents, many of whom have been corrupt, have gone out of their way to hire fixers to be their attorney generals. Consider recent history. Loretta Lynch, 2015, 2017. Eric Holder, 2009, 2015. Michael Mukasey, 2007, 2009. Alberto Gonzalez, 2005, 2007. John Ashcroft, 2001, 2005. Janet Reno, Dick Thornburg, Ed Meese, etc., etc. Barr, however, is a particularly spectacular and sordid case. As George W. H.W. Bush's most notorious insider, and as the Attorney General from 1991 to 1993, Barr wreaked havoc, flaunted the rule of law, and proved himself to be one of the CIA deep state's greatest and most ruthless champions and protectors. Okay, and he's got like bullet points. Barr was a full-time CIA operative, recruited by Langley out of high school starting in 1971. Barr's youth career goal was to head the CIA, which means that Barr was hybrid lineage. Someone along the line decided he had just enough ruthlessness, if that's a word, or ruthlessness embedded in his DNA that he would make an ideal CIA operative. Another item, CIA operative assigned to the China Directorate, where he became close to powerful CIA operative George W.H. Bush, H.W. Bush, whose accomplishments already included the CIA, Cuba, Bay of Pigs, Asia operations, Vietnam War, Golden Triangle narcotics, Nixon foreign policy, Henry Kissinger, and the Watergate operation. And when George H.W. Bush became CIA director in 1976, Barr joined the CIA's legal office, quote-unquote, and Bush's inner circle, and worked alongside Bush's longtime CIA enforcers, Theodore Ted Shackley, Felix Rodriguez, Thomas Kleins, and others, several of whom were likely involved with the Bay of Pigs, John F. Kennedy assassination, and numerous Southeast Asian operations from the Phoenix Program to Golden Triangle narco-trafficking. Barr stonewalled and destroyed the church committee investigations into CIA abuses. Barr stonewalled and stopped inquiries in the CIA bombing assassination of Chilean opposition leader Orlando Letelier. And that was a sordid affair where the CIA co-opted DINA, D-I-N-A operatives from the Chilean Secret Service, as well as the ubiquitous anti-Castro Cuban CIA operatives, and they literally blew up Orlando Letelier and his American assistant, some gal that worked for him, blew up their car, basically, in America, assassination. And that doesn't even include all the other things that they've done during that time frame, blowing up an Air Cubana airliner, and etc., etc. Barr joined George H.W. Bush's legal intelligence team during Bush's vice presidency under President Ronald Reagan. He was really pulling the strings while Bonzo Ronnie was sleeping on the table. rose from assistant attorney general to chief legal counsel to attorney general during the Bush 41 presidency. Barr was a key player in the Iran-Contra operation, if not the most important member of the apparatus, simultaneously managing the operation while also fixing the legal end, ensuring that all the operatives could do their jobs without fear of exposure or arrest, unless they wanted to throw someone under the bus like Barry Seal, who was, you know, they thought was getting out of control. A few more items, and you get the gist. In his attorney general confirmation, Barr vowed to, quote, attack criminal organizations, drug smugglers, and money launderers. It was all hot air. As attorney general, Barr would preserve, protect, cover up, and nurture the apparatus that he helped create and use Justice Department power to escape punishment. Barr stonewalled and stopped investigations into all Bush, Clinton, and CIA crimes, including BCCI and BNL, CIA drug banking, the theft of InSlaw Promise software, and all crimes of state committed by Bush. Now, BNL was a key banking scandal, which was worldwide in scope. Banca Nazionale del Lavoro of Italy. It was a bank that, working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, provided millions of dollars of interest-free loans to Saddam Hussein. Because remember, Iraq was still in recovery mode after the long war with Iran, which the U.S. and its allies financed both sides of the Iran-Iraq war. Henry Kissinger said it best, let them kill each other, right? And Bank of Nacional de Lavoro was the main financial conduit that allowed Hussein to rebuild up his military, his economy. Whatever weapons of mass destruction he had came about through these loans, which were disguised as agricultural loans to allow Hussein to buy excess food products from American farmers and farm machinery from American manufacturers, yada, 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 okay? BNL is a mega scandal, which you never hear about in the mainstream media. CIA drug banking, the theft of InSlaw Promise software, that was a whole other story. The late, great Danny Casolaro wrote a book about that called The Octopus, and he was suicided. Barr left Washington and went through the rotating door to the corporate world, where he took on numerous directorships and counsel positions for major corporations. In 2007 and again from 2017, Barr was counsel for politically connected international law firm Kirkland & Ellis. Among his other notable attorneys and alumni are Kenneth Starr, John Bolton, Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and numerous Trump administration attorneys. Kirkland and Ellis clients include sex trafficker, pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, and Mitt Romney's Bain Capital. So we're talking about William Barr being an extremely evil person, and he goes on, Larry Chang goes on to reference the book, The Conspirators, Secrets of an Intro, The Conspirators, Secrets of an Iran-Contra Insider by Al Martin, a naval intelligence officer, which is a great book. I highly recommend it. Quote, to quote Martin's book, Iran-Contra is a euphemism for the outrageous fraud perpetrated by government criminals for profit and control. Offhandedly, this inaccurate term entered history as shorthand for the public scandals of illicit arms sales to Iran, coupled with illicit weapons deals for Nicaragua. The real story, however, is much more complex. When George Bush, CIA director, Bill Casey, the later director, and Oliver North initiated their plan of government, sanctioned fraud and drug smuggling, they envisioned using 500 men to raise $35 billion. They ended up using about 5,000 operatives and making over $35 billion. In addition, the operation became a government within a government comprising some 30 to 40,000 people the American government turns to when it wishes certain illegal covert operations to be extant pursuant to a political objective, with George Bush at the top of the pyramid. Very interesting. And also around that time, always remember that the savings and loan scandal had gone on, where savings and loans were also known as trust, and they had their own directors, and they would con the locals of any community which the savings and loans happened to be in. Okay, we're here to help you get home loans, yada, yada, yada. People would pour their life savings into these savings and loans. And then the directors, like Neil Bush, Silverado Savings and Loan in Colorado, they would pull the plug, loot all the money, and then the depositors would get absolutely nothing. And the ones who perpetrated all these these frauds and these swindles, they got away scot-free. They threw a few people under the bus. But the savings and loan scandal was a whole nother. It was interrelated with the whole Iran-Contra thing, because many of the players were in Iran-Contra. But it just goes to show how wide the web is, how the financial fraud is done on a mega scale. The savings and loan scandal, where many, many savings and loans were looted and run into the ground by the directors and the board of directors and to the key players in the savings and loans, that made the U.S. Financial system wobble like a bowl of Jell-O. And then you have, of course, you know, Bank of Credit and Commerce International, the CIA drug bank, et cetera, et cetera. So William Barr, being an Iran-Contra insider, mentioned prominently in Terry Reid's book. Terry Reid was a FBI informant, a CIA operative with a background in Air Force intelligence during the Vietnam War era. And if you read his book, which is I regard it as a required reading if people are interested in this stuff, he talks about, and the reason is why it's called compromise, is because he prominently mentions Bill Clinton and George Bush as being deeply implicated in these scandals. And he prominently mentions William Barr, the attorney general at the time. And he also talked about how he first knew William Barr by a pseudonym, Robert Johnson. He didn't know at the time when he first started interacting with him in these covert CIA operations involving drug smuggling, et cetera, that Robert Johnson, so-called, was really William Barr. And other insiders that were whistleblowers, real whistleblowers, not these people who come rocking up and say they were part of this, that, or the other woo-woo program and call themselves a whistleblower. I'm talking about people that were really in some of these, surface-level projects. And they likewise said, I knew William Barr first as Robert Johnson. So Terry Reid's not the only person who identified William Barr as using a pseudonym, Robert Johnson, when he was doing all of these illegal activities covering up all the crimes of the Bush and later the Clinton regime's presidencies. So one has to ask, how the hell can you drain the swamp if you're going to put someone like him in, if you're going to nominate someone like him as the top law enforcement official in America? It just doesn't compute. And people can just blow as much smoke as they want about, 4D chess or whatever the case may be, but it still doesn't wash. Here's some more interesting things that are in the article. Hundreds of insiders, witnesses, and investigators have blown the lid off the Iran-Contra enterprise in exhaustive fashion. These include the investigations of Michael Rupert from the wilderness crossing the Rubicon, Al Martin, the conspirator's secrets of an Iran-Contra insider, Gary Webb, Dark Alliance, Rodney Stitch, defrauding America, drugging America, Terry Reid, compromised Clinton, Bush, and the CIA, Stu Webb, Chip Tatum, the Tatum Chronicles. Of all those, I haven't read Chip Tatum's book yet. Hard to get, but it's out there. Pete Bruton, The Mafia, the CIA, and the George Bush. I've read that book. I've read a lot of those books, right? And that's what, in the pre-internet days, this is what you did, folks. You went out and found these books. And then when the internet came along, then you can order from Amazon or other places. And then you started collecting these books. And you made them part of your library. The accounts of Barry Seal, Edward Catolo, Albert Caroni, Bradley Ayers, Tosh Plumley, Bill Tyree, Gunter Rusbacher, Celerino Castillo, Michael Levine, Trenton Parker, Russell Bowen, Richard Brennecke, Larry Nichols, William Duncan, Russell Welch, and dozens more implicate the Bushes, the Clintons, and the CIA. As described by Mike Rupert, it stood and still stands today, isolated and immune from the operating principles of democracy. It is autonomous and it operates through self-funding via narcotics and weapons trafficking and other things too. To quote former CIA Director William Casey, it is a completely self-funding, off-the-shelf operation. It in fact dictates a substantial portion of this country's foreign, economic, and military policy from a place not accessible to the will of a free people properly armed with facts. And this is where the surface level merges at times with the subsurface, because during the Iran-Contra hearings, and you know, you needed a lot of coffee to sit through that, right? There was a key moment, and this has come up in certain documentaries and videos, when, oh, I forget the name of the congressman, but he was questioning Oliver North about continuity of government, the COG program, and contingency plans that would necessitate bringing in martial law. Because Bush himself said, if they, I'm paraphrasing, if the people ever found out what we'd done, they'd chase us down the street and lynch us, right? So they were already planning what you would call kind of a fail-safe exit type strategy. I just did a quick search. The simple search term, Congressman questions North on COG Rex 84. And it pulls up Congressman Jack Brooks questioned Oliver North, who was in the National Security Council, and asked him about COG, continuity of government, underground bases, FEMA, right? In the event of a nuclear war, in the event of any number of contingencies, including, right, there are secret aspects of the SALT Treaty, and there are secret aspects of what we would call COG that deal with like a technological emergency, i.e., that's a euphemism for like an alien attack, okay? So that's where the surface deep black merges at times with the subsurface. Because this Congressman Jack Brooks was asking North, in his capacity in the National Security Council, were you involved in the continuity of government program, and to explain it? And also, he was asking about Rex 84, the martial law plan, readiness exercise 1984, classified scenario and drill developed by the United States federal government to detain large numbers of United States citizens deemed to be national security threats in the event the president declared a state of emergency, right? And then you have a sub program of Rex 84, Operation Cable Splicer, which was established on the reasoning that if a mass exodus of illegal aliens crossed the Mexican-U.S. border, already happening with this mass immigration program, they would quickly be rounded up and detained at detention centers by FEMA. But of course, they're not going to round up them, they're going to round up other people. Anyway, that was starting to come out in these, for the most part, boring Iran-Contra hearings. There was one guy that was in the audience in the courtroom in Congress in the viewing gallery, held up a large sign that read "Ask about the drugs," and of course they're not going to do that. So when we're talking about William Barr and we're talking about Iran-Contra, I mean, it's even delving into issues of underground bases, continuity of government, roundups of citizens, detaining people. I mean, they had it all going on, okay? And so, in order to drain the swamp, Trump or Trump's minders had decided to install William Barr, nominate him at least as Attorney General of the U.S. Go figure. Okay, enough about that. Make America great again. Why don't you? Okay, and you know, to round out this first segment, and then in the members section, I'm going to talk about AI, killer robots, autonomous robots, talk about what even expand upon what Eve Lorgan and I talked about as far as natural awareness versus this demiurgic AI awareness and how it manifests in so many ways. What I'm going to talk about now is the anatomy of a burgeoning European spring. Now, I like the title. This is from Defend Europa, Defend Europa, which is a very good website, from a nationalist European point of view of how the elite are trying to destroy Europe by this mass influx of immigration. And how all these cultural Marxist policies and socialism, communism, call it what you will, are destroying the ancient lands of Europe. And I like the title, The Anatomy of a Burgeoning European Spring, because George Soros had used all these color revolutions, the Arab Spring, et cetera, to disrupt and, you know, make all these different countries bend to the will of the New World Order, right? I heard that term from a gal in the Defense Information Systems Agency a long time ago, and I like the term the stench of the New World Order, a New World Odor. So, the anatomy of a burgeoning European spring. This is defendeuropa.com, and it's Dateline December 19th, 2018. And they show a map, protest in Europe over the past month, and they show Norway in flames, United Kingdom, France, Belgium, Czech Republic, Hungary, Italy, Greece, Spain. I mean, a lot of people are totally tired of all this nonsense. Okay, let me read from this article because, again, the spin meisters are putting out this nonsense that, oh, it's just a distraction, it's just a psyop, oh, the yellow vest, it has some weird woo-woo occult meaning, and no, that's just nonsense. These are people that are literally sick and tired of what's been going on, and they're doing something about it. I mean, maybe if the American people weren't so fluoridated, maybe we'd see like a large protest movement, but that remains to be seen. Okay, here's the article. The populist right and left have united across Europe in a massive revolt against the corrupt neoliberal world order. Neoliberal is pretty much a catch-all phrase to describe the Talmudic type's efforts at destroying civilization as we understand it. Working class Europeans of every political persuasion and age are in revolt. From France to Sweden, the UK to Germany, Belgium to the Netherlands, everyday people are taking to the streets to voice their discontent with the present neoliberal system, a corrupt system which has failed them. Similar protests have surfaced in Greece, Serbia, and to a lesser extent, Hungary. You may be asking yourself just how the present system has failed ordinary people. The better question, and the question you should be asking, however, is how has the current system not failed ordinary people? Let us begin in France at the epicenter of this populist revolt against the static, out-of-touch, plutocratic, pro-globalization, pro-EU banking, media, and political elite. 5 weeks ago, on November 17th, a hike in fuel taxes served as a catalyst which initially sparked what's being called I can't pronounce French very well in this life. Mouvement des Gilets Jaunes, or the Yellow Vest Movement. I'm sorry, all you French speakers out there, I butchered that one. The Yellow Vest Movement. This was the last straw for the tired, overworked, overtaxed, and struggling French working and middle classes. In the 5 weeks since the initial protests, Macron, in an effort to quell the month-long revolt, suspended the proposed fuel tax hike and announced increases in the minimum wage and a tax cut for most pensioners. Despite these concessions, today, thousands of yellow vests, protesters old and young, are still out protesting. So what exactly are they calling for? Until just recently, the demands of the Yellow Vest movement were not entirely clear. That changed 3 days ago when the official charter of the Yellow Vest 25 Demands to End the Crisis was drafted. The 25 demands are organized into four categories: economy and work, politics, health and environment, and geopolitical. And get this, okay? Among the demands include ending banking monopolies and breaking up, quote unquote, too big to fail banks. And that term has come into existence since 2008. So right off the bat, ending banking monopolies and breaking up too big to fail banks. And right off the bat, they're on the right track because that's something that the brain dead millennials, brain dead social justice warriors have no clue about. They're completely oblivious about the control exerted on the surface population by the banking monopolies. And these people, these yellow vest types, they just home right in on it, right? Leaving the European Union, which is a good thing. Ending mass immigration, right? Which is a bedrock plank of the Frankfurt School, Cultural Marxism, the Coudenhove-Kalergi plan. Removing globalist ideology from all national educational institutions, okay, and that runs the gamut, folks. Globalist ideology, ethno-masochism of hating yourself because you're white, right? And white privilege and white guilt and all that stuff, right? Breaking up media monopolies, weakening big pharma's influence on healthcare and banning GMOs. Okay, and now the boneheads are saying, you know, the ones that disinformers, and you can find them on your Facebook news feeds, the ones who say this, they either can't see the forest for the trees, or they're idiots, or they're deliberate disinformers. Right off the bat, those are the demands. Ending banking monopolies, breaking up too big to fail banks, leaving the European Union, ending mass immigration, removing globalist ideology from all national educational institutions, breaking up media monopolies, weakening big pharma's influence on healthcare, and banning GMOs, right? And a key thing about removing globalist ideology is removing all the perversions and crap that's not just seeped in, but come roaring in a flood tide, even to the, you know, kindergarten, preschool, where you're having these Baphomet drag queens giving these presentations to all these poor kids, right? That's what they're talking about. It's not just globalist ideology. It's all the perversion, filth, and pedo-pushing that's going on, right? Weakening big pharma's influence on healthcare, breaking up media monopolies, banning GMOs. And then the spin control now is, oh, the yellow vest is some woo-woo occult symbolism. No, it's a much more prosaic and much more profound than that. Let me read you what the yellow vest is all about. Alain de Benoist, a prominent French philosopher, sorry for butchering the French again. Apparently, in one of my past lives, I was very fluent in French, not so much in this one. A prominent French philosopher, academic, and political intellectual has described the Yellow Vest movement as, quote, populism in its purest form, unquote. The symbol of the Yellow Vest embodies this expression of pure populism, but how? In France, it is obligatory to carry a yellow vest in your car, so practically everyone owns one. There is perhaps no better uniform that can be used to symbolize the worker or proletariat, and thus the populist movement. Think about it. Who are the ones building our bridges, buildings, and skyscrapers? Who are the ones fixing the roads we drive on? What about firefighters, airport workers, or those who are fixing our telephone and electricity lines? Every one of these essential workers wears a high-visibility yellow vest. And just how have these essential yellow vest-wearing workers been treated by the ruling neoliberal globalist elite? Aside from being left behind economically, many have been written off as uneducated rednecks, racist, bigots, sexist, homophobic, and deplorable. In truth, the neoliberal globalist elite, or the new elite, absolutely detests those who fall into the sector of society. I'm exactly the opposite. When I see someone with a yellow vest, and what they call in the UK or Australia a tradie, a tradesperson, a tradesman, a tradeswoman, I have utmost respect for them. They're the ones that, you know, when the heavy rains come along and the sewers get jammed up again, they're the ones that go in and fix them. When the power lines go down because of another weather weaponry attack, they're the ones that go out there, you know, braving the elements, you know, trying to avoid being electrocuted. They're the ones that fix that. When the roads get all messed up and there's potholes everywhere, they're the ones that fix it. I have respect for people like that. I have respect for people that wear a yellow vest. I only found out about the meaning behind the yellow vest movement reading this article. And, you know, it's heartening to me. Russian philosopher, academic, and political analyst Alexander Dugin echoes this sentiment. He writes, according to these new elites, the people and society in their current state have no place in this world. Therefore, the typical representative of the new elite, Hillary Clinton, boo hiss, upset by the success of the right-wing populist Trump, openly insulted ordinary Americans, deplorables, which in meaning means insignificance. Deplorables have chosen Trump, not because they love him, but to respond to the globalist witch Clinton. The populism of the yellow vest can be viewed as a retaliatory uprising of the people against the elites, who have completely lost their connection with society. The elites have built their own world in which double standards, norms of political correctness, liberal demagogy reign. Without a doubt, the concerns which lie at the heart of the yellow vest protests transcend national boundaries. The yellow vests are now being used across Europe to symbolize the people's discontent with the out-of-touch, corrupt metropolitan elite. It's no surprise that similar protests have sprung up all over Europe. Last week, in London, thousands of pro-Brexit protesters in yellow vests took to the streets to express their dissatisfaction with their Prime Minister Theresa May's attempts to sabotage the Brexit deal. Of course, Of course, they're going to try to stall out and sabotage the Brexit deal. As it stands, the current Brexit deal would mean Britain would remain in the single market and customs union. The country would also be required to obey all current and new EU laws, comply with the budget commitments, and comply with ECJ judicial oversight. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, the current deal would allow the continuation of free movement from other EU states into the country, something Britons clearly do not want. In short, May's Brexit deal goes against everything Britons voted for in 2016. Yellow vest protests have also been seen in Stockholm, Sweden, where demonstrators gathered to peacefully protest the UN Migration Pact, which has been in the works for decades, actually. In Brussels, Belgium, large amounts of yellow vest demonstrators gathered to voice their discontent with current living conditions as well as the UN Migration Pact. Protesters have called for the resignation of the Prime Minister. Belgians pay the highest state taxes on diesel in the whole of Europe. Following Belgian yellow vest protesters taking to the streets, Belgian ministers announced fuel prices would not be index-linked from 2019. Despite this concession, and as they did in France, protests have continued. In for a penny, in for a pound. Although substantially smaller in scope, the cities of Rotterdam and The Hague in the Netherlands have also seen yellow vest protests spring up over general dissatisfaction toward the government's economic measures. People are simply struggling each month to make ends meet. On Friday, the 15th of December, thousands of protesters took to the streets of the Serbian capital of Belgrade to call for a resignation of President Aleksandar Vučić. A substantial contingent of protesters were seen wearing yellow vests. And they talk about what's going on, the protests in Hungary, the protests in Croatia and Canada, etc., right? So the moral of the story, folks, what the lamestream media, including at times RT, which is disturbing to me, they'll have some quackademic come on and talk about how the protest movement, the yellow vests, are just a bunch of commies who want all these free entitlements, who want everything free, and are just basically trying to make it seem like they're just a bunch of social justice warrior millennial types when they're anything but. Because social justice warriors and millennials wouldn't even know about the banking monopoly. They wouldn't even know about the GMOs. They wouldn't even know about the UN Migration Pact. They wouldn't know about any of that. So they're having these quackademics come on and just try to paint these protesters as something that they're not. And that to me is a red flag, right? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because millions of people are now rising up. It'd be nice to see this happen in America and elsewhere, but that remains to be seen. So, going into the new year, I see this as a good development. People are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And they've taken to the streets, and there's nothing they can do about it because, this is not like Tiananmen Square. If they wiped out all those students in Tiananmen Square, they still got the information out to the Western world because people were still sending out faxes. China was not the hermetically sealed country it is today, and there's still ways to get information out of China. Now it's the age of the internet, it's the age of instantaneous telecommunications. They're making a point now of saying, ooh, all these encrypted programs that people use, that really just helps the terrorists and it helps the pedo rings and it helps the drug traffickers, and it just, again, it's just an excuse. Whip out all these bogeymen who they themselves control and run and use it as justification to shut down encrypted comms, right? Any excuse will do. And by saying that these yellow vest types are just a bunch of commies who want entitlements, who want everything for free, no, that's not going to work because too many people have taken to the streets in Europe. They have internet capability, they have the means to instantaneously put out information, put out what's really going on. Right, I have friends that live in Portland, Oregon, and they say that the media will cover this massive protest by all these social justice warriors. And my friends there will say, when you're there in the streets, there's not many of them at all. It's a very small demonstration, but the media makes it out like it's like some kind of huge demonstration. And my friends are there on the ground. And they see it for what it is, complete BS. So they try to spin it out any way they want to make it seem like these social justice warriors are everywhere. But really, they're just a bunch of loudmouths with no real power. Only power they have is when their masters dangle them on the end of a string and get them to do things for them. Point of relevance is they can't stop this yellow vest movement from growing. It's going to grow exponentially, I feel. And anyway, that's a good note to end this segment. Once again, Happy New Year's, Merry Christmas to everybody, and have a really good time, and thank you for all the support, and thank you for listening to our show, the Cosmic Switchboard Show, and Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Also, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member. And we'll see you at the top of the member segment.